So,
yeah. Well, most of the political establishment here is, you know, first of all, you know, the status quo. The one thing is very interesting. The office I work in was during the Occupy Wall Street days. We were occupied by the Occupy Wall Street people, and so I was happy to meet with them, and they were a little surprised that, you know, that somebody was willing to, because they had a lot of hostile that hostily went in and took over people's offices, and I found that they found that I agreed with them about half of everything, all the crony capitalism and the bailouts and the insider deals and the, you know, ability of dealer banks to front run the Fed on different kinds of monetary policies. So a total agreement. The other half I didn't agree at all on. But one of the things I asked about, once the temperature got lowered in the conversation, we sort of found that we were all being very civil to each other. I said, let me ask you a question. How successful have you been at getting meetings in Democrats' offices? Because obviously this was sort of the left's answer to the Tea Party at the time. It was Occupy Wall Street. And they said, well, not very successful at all. And I told them, I said, well, I will tell you why. It's because, you know, if you're here in this building or this complex up here, whether you're a Democrat, you're Republican, you're black, you're white, you're liberal, conservative, north, south, whatever it is you profess to be, the one thing you all have in common is the system's working for you. You know, they don't, you guys, meaning the Occupy people, wanted to blow the system up. You know, that, you know, the Democrats that they couldn't get meetings with didn't want to blow the system up. They wanted to go to work for Goldman Sachs.
Exactly.
And my gosh, perish the thought. So that's why they weren't very successful. But I suspect there are forces on the left. You know, the worst thing that happened to the Occupy movement was when you had the rise of Mr. Obama, that really put a big crimp on the Occupy movement, because people, they thought, the left believed that they had one of their own, you know, going in, and they, you know, he was going to correct all their perceived injustices and those sorts of things. And it's turned out, of course, quite the opposite has been the case, that he has made nice with the same people that, you know, got us into some of the problems we were in before. And that's part of why Obama's unpopular right now. He's lost he was never popular with the political right and with Republicans, but he's got the left has become somewhat disenchanted with him, because the Barack Obama that's presiding is just not the same guy that was running. But I'm not sure that the next person that gets elected will be doing what it is they say they were going to do.
Well, I don't think they can, not under the current system, period, because honestly, you have to shake too many hands and kiss too many asses to get to that position, and then you're basically just a puppet at that stage. So I don't think that anything shy of really a complete political shakeup is ever gonna make any kind of a difference. So,
well, I'd like to ask you. You referenced this a moment ago. Your economic confidence model and that peaking in later 2015, which would begin a multi-year downturn that would be uglier than what we saw during the last downturn, maybe by an order of magnitude or two. But you can educate me, because I'm a student of your cycle's work, but I don't pretend to be anything like as knowledgeable as you or anybody that works directly for you there at Princeton Economics, or Armstrong Economics, rather, at Princeton Economic Institute, I know is your think tank arm. You have that cycle turn date, but we just went through a cycle turn date in your model here in early September. What, given your work, what is it you think changed at that cycle turn date, that particular cycle turn date?
Well, we'll find out on Wednesday. largely, this is it's a minor turning point, but it's setting up for the stage into 15. So if we're going to get a phase transition at this point, we can really run it up for effectively the next year. And So I think we're going to see a lot of changes. There's, I mean, if you look at all the polls, I mean, it's very, very interesting. We have the stock market. Everybody keeps saying, oh, there's going to be this huge crash or whatever. But at the same time, you have retail participation at historic lows. You have the polls as far as in politics, people that think that the government is doing well, will it get better, is at historic lows. And so there is a prevailing layer of real pessimism. And we have, on a global scale, you have Europe cracking up. The banking crisis over there is just monumental. The failure to have ever issued a single national debt and consolidated, as Hamilton did in the United States, has been devastating. Because all the banks, to use reserves, had to have bonds of all the various members. And they're not all the same. So you have Germany now going negative because people are figuring, well, that's the last place left. You got France looking like it's going to fall off a cliff. Everybody else is pretty much in danger of extinction. And the banking system over there is just totally insolvent. It's sitting there with these bonds of all these various governments, and once you start getting sovereign problems, there go the reserves. So Europe looks really, really off the wall, and this is pushing capital towards the United States, and I found it very interesting how Barack Obama's former economic advisor came out, and I believe he floated a balloon. Just like Larry Summers did on the negative interest rates, he floated a balloon saying that the United States maybe should give up the dollar as a reserve currency. Because what's going to happen is that the dollar is just going to keep going higher and higher. But there's no place to go. You can't, you know, buy yuan or rubles. Europe looks terrible. If Scotland breaks, you may see the pound really fall and eventually retest the par level. You have Canada's not, you know, Quebec is, I think, within the top five insolvent provinces in the world. It's just an absolute total disaster as far as debt is concerned. And this is what I've been saying about socialism. We had the collapse in communism from 1989. Now it's our turn with the socialism idea. So it's not that you don't help people, but the problem is who are we helping is basically the government and their pensions. That's it. Very little money actually gets out to the so-called poor. And the middle class is just paying through the nose for it. And this is what we have. I mean, very simple. I mean, you just look in Europe, more than half of the municipalities in Germany are bankrupt. They need to put in a 5% tax just to pay for that. Then they want to do a 10%, take 10% of everybody's accounts for the bank bailout. I mean, when does this end? I mean, this is highly deflationary. And we're just looking at, honestly, just writing everything off. And anybody who thought their future was secure or for pensions or whatever in their retirement, good luck. So we're going to see a lot more civil unrest coming out when people realize, hey, everything I thought I was going to have in life is gone. And that's what we're facing. And that's what I mean by the collapse of the socialism side. And the unemployment is going to rise, coming mostly from state and local governments. But, you know, the system is designed by an absolute, I mean, not even a moron would have designed it this way. I mean, you a small town has 20 cops, 10 go to retire. They never funded their pensions. They just thought they could tax everybody to do that, but then they got to hire 10 people more. So now the cost of government is rising dramatically, and people can't afford these kind of taxes. So there goes your economic growth, and I think there comes the civil unrest. And so when this thing turns down after the end of next year, people are going to get a lot more angry. So the elections in 2016, they're going to be interesting.
So just to follow up on the cycle question, one of the things, I know you've got a big report on gold coming out. That's one of everybody's favorite questions. People looking at you, where are your safe havens? I guess, you know, you've been on record saying, you know, just as you indicated, that for a time at least, U.S. stock market, the private equity market, what might be seen as a safe haven than a lot of this international, not only domestic, but international capital flows go into there, and that gold's time to shine is not yet. And because we've seen a recent real weakness in the price of gold and in price of silver, is that something you still see continuing?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, when did gold take off? When the economic confidence model turned down. All right, so its next advance should be when the economic confidence model turns down again. That's when you start looking at it, when you need a hedge against government. The only problem with gold is that it is being displaced to some degree with diamonds, and that's the security issue. You can hop on a plane and with a pocket full of diamonds and walk through a metal detector, no problem. You can't do that with gold. And so diamonds are starting to, certified ones are being used for moving money around a lot more than people would suspect.
That's an interesting observation. Well, people are looking for things where there is no counterparty risk. That's what, and people go, who do you trust? And I guess you've got the different disciplines you have. And the Austrian School of Economics talks about Ludwig von Mises' crack up boom. And then you get from the left, you might have people like Hyman Minsky, where they talk about the Minsky moment, when people go, holy cow, you know right now, I, for example, I trust backstops by the sovereign governments to stop runs on money market funds and banks and the like. But then people go, who's going to backstop these sovereign governments? And it sure seems like that next round that comes up in your work, beginning really manifesting itself in a big way at the end, about a year from now, is where you really might be in danger of facing that crack-up boom or that Minsky moment where people go, I don't trust the governments.
That's where we're moving. And people, I mean, we've conducted studies of that during the Great Depression, because you had a sovereign default there. And the very interesting thing was that AAA corporate bonds, the yields narrowed. People began to realize, well, you know, even if General Motors went down, I still get something. If a sovereign government goes down, you get nothing. Zero. It's a totally unsecured debt. So there is a difference between private and public. And people will begin to see that a lot more. And so I think when we turn down after next year, it's going to be very interesting. But thanks a lot, Glenn, for joining us. I think we should do this again after the Scottish vote comes in and for your elections down there.
Okay, well, great. Thank you so much for having me back, and it's been great to talk with you. And I continue to throw my voice in with everybody that wants to thank you, because a lot of what you do, I know, is hard work, and a lot of it you're not getting paid anything for. It's a public service, and you're trying to, you know, educate people and try to help people get ready as best you can and as best they can for what's coming. And so I, for one, thank you for all that you do.
Well, it's the only way we can make a real difference is to educate people so then they know what the problem is. If we don't know what the problem is, this is only going to get worse.
Okay, Marty, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Glenn.